Welcome to the Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista, where we chat with industry leaders and get their take on the challenges facing the market. And maybe we'll have a little fun along the way.
On this week's episode of the Marketing Stir podcast, Kevin O'Connor joins Vincent to discuss breaking into the U.S. market, the future of the marketing landscape, and his design-first mindset as Director of Growth at DesignIt.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Marketing Stir. I am your host, Vincent Petrofessa, the Vice President of B2B Products and Partnerships here at Stirista. Today, I'm riding solo, ladies and gentlemen, my co-host, my Commander-in-Chief here at Stirista. He is not here. He sends his best. He can't wait to be back on another episode. And I'm going to see him in person next week. Who knows when this podcast comes out? I would have probably seen him like three times, but I'm going to San Antonio in the summer because a lot of people do that, right? No, they don't. It's ridiculously hot there. But my guest knows all about heat. He is in a very, very hot state as well, but we'll get to him in a moment. Let's pause. If it's the first time you're listening to the podcast, this is the Marketing Stir from Stirista. Who's Stirista? I'm just going to talk about ourselves for just like 7 seconds, maybe. I don't know. We are a marketing technology company. We own our own business-to-business data, business-to-consumer data. We help companies access that data, help them get new customers through our email sending platform, DSP. Email me, vincent@stirista.com. That is how confident I am in our services. I just gave you my email address. But it was a great weekend. A special shout out to one of our producers, Joe. Joe's birthday today. He's recording this episode. Great. I saw Joe and his amazing girlfriend, Lily, this weekend, where they came to see me do stand-up comedy. People know I'm a comedian out there, a lot of people, but now more know. My night job, my night hustle, ladies and gentlemen. The dedication is all Stirista, but at night, and he surprised me. I looked out in the audience. I happened to be closing out the show as the quote unquote headliner, as they call it, but it's just the final act. And there he was. And it was great. And good thing I did good that night. I did okay that night and he got to see me. So it was a nice surprise. And he's here on his birthday. So shout out to Joe and Lily. Lily, you have to listen to this episode for a change. I don't know. Maybe she already listens. Who knows? But ladies and gentlemen, I have a great guest for us today. I'm very excited about our guests all the time, but this one, really, I am. I mean it. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the Director of Growth at DesignIt, Kevin O'Connor. What's going on, Kevin?
Good morning, Vincent. How are you, sir? And Joe, happy birthday. I am doing fantastically. I really appreciate you guys having me on today and looking forward to a very robust and exciting conversation.
Absolutely. And I was right. You're in a very hot state. It's like make San Antonio, Texas look like a cold front, Phoenix, I would imagine. Or maybe it's not. I don't know.
No. It's like living on the surface of the sun currently. It is a very hot and horrible place. It's like living in Satan's armpit. All the euphemisms that you can use to describe how hot it is can be applied to Phoenix, Arizona right now. But I'm actually currently in Coronado, California. Usually my family and I escape the heat for just this month because July is typically the hottest month of the year. Last year, they broke the record for most days over 110 in the month of July. So I didn't want my three children to melt. So I was like, let's go out and get closer to the water. And that's where we're at until August 4th. And my kids go back to school August 5th.
Wow. Yeah. I'm a parent as well. Kevin, that's good parenting. It's like, what do you want? I just don't want them to melt. That's always a good thing. I love it. So Kevin, thank you for taking some time out with us, especially on, you know, a little, excursion there, getaway. But Kevin, talk to us about DesignIt. And then I want to know, like, your role, Director of Growth is one of these roles that 10 years ago, they're really Director of Growth, not really a big title, right? It's just kind of, you know, come in the last few years. So talk to us about DesignIt and then your role within the organization.
Absolutely. So DesignIt, for those that aren't aware, is a Wipro company. Wipro is one of these massive publicly traded conglomerates based out of India with roughly 400,000 total global employees with many subsidiaries, which we are one of. But DesignIt itself is a full-service global design, advertising, and marketing business. We don't describe ourselves as an agency or as a consultancy because of the depth and breadth of our core capabilities and the size of our network and in terms of what we can actually deliver for our clientele. And so that's something that differentiates us, right? Ultimately, everything we do is brought through a design first lens, but anything you name can be designed, right? You need a strategy for a campaign, we design it. You need something for a website or a recreation of a website or relaunch of a website or a redesign, we design it. You know, essentially that's who we are at our core. And then for me, in terms of like director of growth, you know, this is a very interesting and exciting and challenging job, but in the challenging in the best possible way, because, you know, it gets me excited in the morning to run out there, meet new prospective clients, new prospective partners, establish relationships, highlight what we can do for them, figure out other ways that we can engage with, you know, prospective clients, right? I think that's one of the key things right now that they brought me in to help with. We need to find ways to raise our levels of awareness. You know, Design It itself has been around for 30 years, right? They were started in Oslo, Norway in 1991. And then through a series of acquisitions in the United States, they purchased some other agencies and then put them under the Design It umbrella. And that was back in 2021. So although we have a really strong presence in the EU and a number of other markets throughout the world, in the United States, Design It as a brand name is still starting to find its footing. And so my primary objective is to make sure that I raise those levels of awareness so I can start to open more doors, meet more people, establish those relationships, and really highlight what we can do for them.
And thanks for that background, Kevin. So talk to us about also, as growth, like you're saying, are you responsible also, you know, the marketing of the company? Are you on sales calls? Are you on pitches of the service? Kind of talk to us about that, because if you are, you know, sales and marketing, that's not a muscle that everyone has. And if you're doing both, that's great. And that's one way for sales and marketing to get along.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I mean, luckily for me, I've got 20 years of experience in both working on the agency and the client side. So I really have a unique perspective in terms of my ability to understand what clients actually want, right? Everybody is driving usually towards some sort of increase in revenue or streamlining the business so you maintain higher levels of revenue because you're not overspending, right, with overhead and other things like that. So I really understand what those bottom line elements are that most clients are looking for. And then on the agency side, I spent most of my career on that side of the business, really trying to solve these complex issues for our clients. And so, again, I think that unique perspective is what kind of helps drive me. And in terms of what I do, you know, we have a CMO. We have a chief marketing officer that's based out of our UK office. I work with her hand in glove. She's fantastic. Her name is Zoe Bishop. She really knows her stuff. And so she understands how important it is for us to start to raise those levels of awareness. So I work with her on trying to figure out how we're going to market ourselves in the US market, but she oversees all of our marketing efforts from a global standpoint. And we have around, I think, 16 different studios in 13 different countries, right? So she's got a lot on her plate. So I work with her in making sure that we are finding ways to engage with folks here. And then yes, that's on the other side of it, I lead all of our pitches. I make sure that everybody is buttoned up, has a clear understanding of what they're trying to say, how they're trying to communicate it to the prospective client. I want it to be clear, concise, rehearsed, and ready to go. And at the same time, I also do a lot of traveling, going to conferences and other places to meet people for the first time, to network, to try to establish that relationship, because you don't ever win any business unless you have a foundation of trust underneath you with the prospective client, you know, and that means actually getting to know them in person, in the real world. So anytime I have the opportunity to do something like that, I leap at it.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I love the face-to-face. That's really where... Yeah, that's like kind of what this podcast is about. It's like, what if I met Kevin at the cocktail hour at a conference? We're talking about life. We're talking about your role. That's kind of the background of the podcast. But it's spawned from, you know, AJ and I loving to go to these conferences and loving to talk to people. So yeah, I totally see that. Kevin, talk to us about, it's a question we ask all of our guests and people love it because it's not always the traditional path, right? So how'd you get started in marketing in general?
That is a good question, honestly. So I first moved to New York City in December of 2002 with big dreams. I had a Bachelor of Arts in theater. So I basically had a Bachelor of Arts in unemployment. but then I actually got a job as a dialysis technician. So I became a licensed phlebotomist and I used to clean out people's blood because of their kidneys not functioning properly. And that job allowed me to work 3 days a week, 15-hour shifts, and then I would go out and audition and stuff. But then at one point I was looking for something a little bit different, and I got a temp job opportunity at an advertising agency, which was Euro RSCG Life at the time. Now they are Havas Life or Havas Metro. I'm not sure, they've changed the name a few times, but they were focused on healthcare professional advertising and all of that stuff. So a friend of mine was like, "Hey, would you cover for me? I'm going on vacation 2 weeks. We need a temp." I was like, "Absolutely. I need a job." As soon as I got my foot in the door there, I loved it. I was like, "Wow, this is so great, right? There's an opportunity for me to have a creative outlet. Well, I have weekends off, well, I have healthcare coverage where I could make some money, and I could immediately see a career path in front of me." So as soon as I got that temp job, I did everything I could to try to make sure that I really excelled and try to establish myself as somebody that, you know, was dedicated and it would work really hard, even though I had zero experience. You know, that wasn't where I was coming from, but the job didn't require that. Well, that job led to another temp job within Euro with another gentleman that I worked for a number of years named Dan Marcel, who is, I believe, now the CFO at Havas, but he was an incredible first boss to have, to be quite honest with you. He really taught me a lot about the right way to manage people, how to talk to people. You know, if I did something incorrectly, he would come up to me and gently say, "Hey, Kev, like, don't do it this way, do it that way." Right. And I'd be like, "Oh, I'm okay. I'm so sorry." You know, I was like, I really wanted to mirror that kind of approach as my career started to expand in management, right? As I started to manage people directly, I really took those lessons to heart because I knew it made him successful and I thought it would make me successful, because it's about bringing that kind of human to human element. And so then I worked for him as like his primary assistant, and then I moved into a production coordinator position, and then so on and so forth to the point where I'm at now as the director of growth for Design It. But that's how it all kind of kicked off.
That's I love that, you know, because one of that is a very unique story, because we haven't had many people or less. Like, I was in theater and I did that. You know, it's crazy. My background is communications, mass media with a focus on marketing and a theater minor. So I'm kind of doing all the things right. So it's kind of, you know, I know how those three fields help me, Kevin, but how does your theater background kind of help you with marketing and the storytelling aspect of it, right? The performance of it. I'd love to know. I didn't realize that. That's great.
You know, actually it took a long time, but I actually do use my degree all the time now. And when I first got an opportunity to move, because I had a very non-traditional path, I actually started in production project management. At one point I was the senior director of production project management at Tribal DDB. And mostly, if you're going to move into a more business development role, a new business role, you usually come from the account side. But I had a few unique opportunities that kind of showcased my ability in that capacity. And then eventually they gave me this chance to take over as the head of business development when I was at Tribal Worldwide. And I essentially just ran with it. I loved it, you know. But again, what it really boiled down to was figuring out unique and interesting ways to tell a story, right? I know how to read a room. I know what makes people kind of lean in and start listening. And again, most of the time when a client comes to a new business pitch, whether it be remote or in person, they're excited too. Like, they want to be wowed. They want to be impressed. They want to have fun, you know? And so how do you develop that? Well, again, having this theater background, I understand the power of presentation, of storytelling, of making something interesting and unique, getting people to smile in the room, having an actual one-to-one personal connection with them, I think is really, really important. And so a lot of my success has stemmed from that, having that clear understanding that when you're in a room, you're talking to human beings. Who are those human beings? Can you read the room correctly? What's working? What's not? How quickly can you pivot? And can you answer those questions succinctly? And also, it's one of the other things too. It's like, I really push my teams when we have a big opportunity to rehearse. And that word, for some reason, in the advertising space gets people nervous. I don't know why. I think it's because they think that they're going to be asked to do some sort of Shakespearean soliloquy, but that is not the case. They just have to make sure that they are buttoned up, because again, when you're in a new business presentation like that, this is our opportunity to showcase how well we work together too. And so if you're doing that in a way that is transitions easy from one person to the next, and everybody else is aware of what the person's about to say, if for some reason somebody drops the ball, somebody else on your team can grab it and run with it.
So I love it. See, there's a reason why, you know, we brought this episode together, Kevin, me and you, the theater background. We just talked about comedy. You know, it's funny. It's a question that I get asked a lot too. They're like, you know, as you know, a comedian and you know, with improv background, it's so funny when I go visit the San Antonio office, the headquarters, you know, our CEO is usually like, hey, let's do some improv exercises, you know, just open some people up and talk. And then like the first two times was great. And now I think people hide from me when I get there because they know I'm going to come with like some yes and exercises. But it's, I remember being asked this question, and I think it's read the room is the right, I love that term, because if you're doing a presentation and it's not resonating with anyone, you're like, I got to go in this direction. Just look at the faces. If they're down, their phones, it's like, they're not adapting to what you're saying. Read the room, be able to improvise, know how to handle yourself when questions are being thrown at you. You could do as much research, right? But also you have to be able to think on your feet. So that is, that's great. I love that.
I mean, just to touch on that too, the yes and philosophy is something that I've been leveraging throughout my entire career. And I highlight it all the time, because when it comes to advertising and marketing, when a client comes to you with a very specific problem, almost all of them have some sort of solution now, right? It's very rare that you'll run into a situation where the answer is no. It's always yes and, yes if, yes or, you know, but never yes or never no. Right? Because no leaves you nowhere else to go. But there's so many technology solutions, so many creative ways to tackle communication issues between you and your core customer, that I think it's critical to make sure that you have that open mindset. Because as soon as you say no, there's nowhere else to go. And I've always said that over and over and over again. Even when I was in the production project management side of the business, the same thing would be true internally. If we ran into a roadblock, if we didn't think we were able to get something done, there was always a path. There's always a solution.
Love it. I love it. So Kevin, talk to us, you mentioned 30 years of the organization. Why the US now? Why the US in general? Talk to us about that mindset that the company's thinking.
Yeah, so Rational Interaction, who they acquired back in 2020, was established in 2009. And they quickly grew in prominence, getting their largest client, which we still have today, which is Microsoft. So we've been working with Microsoft for roughly 13, 14 years now. They're our largest client. About half of our staff are dedicated to the work that we do for them. But it's because of the work that we've been doing for them that relationship continues to grow and flourish. So ultimately, the acquisition came because of this really well-established relationship with Microsoft. And then because of that, they wanted to bring that into the Wipro and Design It network. So I think that was one of the things that enticed them into acquiring Rational just those a few years back. And then we've been growing exponentially. But also, I think there's a unique opportunity, right? Design It is really well known in the European markets. They have a storied history of doing all kinds of really creative and interesting things from a design perspective all the way through to marketing campaigns. So again, I think it's a really great time for us to kind of be a new player in the space in the US to some degree, right? Even though we've been around 30 years, the US market, we've been around two or three, right? So I think that's kind of an interesting way for us to position ourselves to be kind of a usurper in comparison to a lot of these other folks that have been around a long time and maybe aren't as hungry as we are to establish ourselves and to do the kind of work that we know we can.
Yeah, no, definitely makes sense. Talk to us about, so I know this is, we get asked this a lot too, like at Starista, where it's like, and we ask everyone on the podcast, but sometimes when you're in the marketing solutions business, right, it's like, okay, well, how does one also advertise themselves and market themselves? So what are some channels that you're using, Kevin? Like you said, some going to conferences, right, getting yourself out there. What are some other channels that you're working that are working that you're doing?
Yeah, I mean, LinkedIn obviously is huge for me. I used LinkedIn Sales Navigator. I'm constantly on there. I was recently published in, I was recently published in a retail publication in and around how I think AI is going to impact the future. Those things get picked up and help elevate the levels of awareness that we have. We have a PR team that we work with. We're starting to spend money on paid media, but a lot of it is focused on LinkedIn. I think we'll probably start to expand to some other channels, and we've tested some of that in the past, but it has had middling results. Whereas on LinkedIn, I think I'm starting to see a little bit more of an influx in inbound leads based on our activity on that platform. But again, it's really about finding where professionals are, right? You know, what are those platforms that they're engaging with? You know, I think podcasts like this are a great way for us to get ourselves out there and establish, you know, a relationship with an audience that isn't aware of who we are or what we bring to the table. And, you know, I think we're pretty open to everything. But right now there's a big, heavy focus on LinkedIn. And I think as we start to run more of these tests and do some A/B testing and figure out what's working, what isn't, we'll start to expand across other channels.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. And so I can't wait to ask you our infamous LinkedIn question later that we ask all of our guests. So let's hold that thought. But Kevin, your experience, right? Partnerships, what makes a successful partnership? What are some things that Designit is doing to achieve successful partnerships out there?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a number of examples that I can highlight. More recently, we started a new relationship with an organization called ZipFizz. And obviously, I can't go into too much detail. But if you're not familiar, they are in the energy and hydration space, you know, those packets that you can pour into water. And they were based out of Seattle. And they were brought in through an internal connection with somebody that was like who knew the CEO and one of the founders. And honestly, this relationship has continued to grow and flourish based on what we keep bringing to the table, right? Like they were kind of new to the advertising space. They were looking for a partner that was going to help guide them in that respect. And thus far, it's only gone in one direction, which is up, which is great. Because again, we believe in the product. We believe in our partnership with them. We want to make sure we're doing everything we can for them at any given moment. But really what established that relationship was, again, what I was saying before, that foundation of trust. As soon as we went in on day one, we said, hey, this is what we want to do. This is what you're going to see from it. If that happens, let's continue to evolve the relationship. Well, this is what we set up. This is what we saw happen. And now the relationship is evolving, right? And so again, it's about the pitch process is just really the first step in a true relationship, right? You're starting to develop that trust. But once you actually get your foot in the door, that's where things really start to open up and you get a much better sense of what you could and couldn't do potentially for that client, right? And then once you have that foundational trust, a lot of the times things can grow exponentially. Hence what happened with Microsoft and a lot of the other long tenured clients that we've had.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah, it starts with trust, starts with relationships, I always say, right? People are trusting you and you're sometimes the person that they first see in their intro to the organization. I take great pride in that myself. Trust, results as well, metrics, right? So how is Designit measuring success for its clients for the marketing campaigns?
Well, that's a really great question. And that's something that I really try to highlight when I go into, especially what I consider to be like credentials presentations, those upfront opening salvos that we have with a prospective client. And oftentimes I really point out that, yes, a lot of our competitors like to point to what I consider to be soft metrics, right? Like the engagement rate was this, the impressions was that, we had this much, blah, 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 right? But again, unless you're seeing something impacted on the bottom line, like did you see an increase in revenue? Did you see a decrease in costs? Were there efficiencies made with your internal sales team or whatever, or whoever it is that you're engaging with? You know, those are the things that really matter to the client more than anything else. And again, we, from a design perspective, believe that creativity can drive those true business results, right? We wouldn't be in business if we didn't believe that, and we wouldn't be successful if we weren't able to execute it. So we can do all of those things. But again, it really boils down to what those established KPIs are at the beginning that we talk to our clients about from a business perspective, first and foremost, right? What are you guys trying to accomplish? Are you trying to garner additional awareness in the marketplace, which you think will lead to sales? Is this something that's going to be more focused on, you know, a direct acquisition campaign? You know, what are you trying to accomplish? And then what does success really look like to you from a business perspective? And if we can get to that, that's what we consider to be successful. If not, then again, yeah, we can point to those other things, but you can get impressions any day of the week and twice on Sunday. It doesn't mean that the campaign is actually connecting with your core audience. That is only shown if you see it in the bottom line.
I want to talk about, you've been in a lot of different leadership roles. What are some of the qualities that you really think a great leader needs to have? What's a valuable lesson you've learned as part of that journey?
Look, I think that my experience in production project management has provided me the foundation for success. And by that, I mean, I've had the opportunity in a role like that to work with every single person within an agency or when I was on the client side. Meaning in a production project management role, you're kind of the center of the storm, right? You're working with strategists, you're working with, you know, creatives, designers, writers, account folks, technologists, you know, like an advertising agency is like seven, eight businesses in one. And every single one of those different roles and departments have different personalities, right? People that are in tech oftentimes are maybe a little bit more reserved, whereas people in account services are oftentimes a little bit more gregarious and out there, you know? And so again, how do I adjust my personality as a manager to get the best out of them? Well, having had that experience in the first 10, 15 years of my career, it's provided me that foundation so I can slightly adjust to make sure I'm a bit of a chameleon in that sense, because again, everybody needs to be spoken to slightly differently to get the best outcomes. Everybody is very different. I try to make sure I get a true understanding of who people are, what makes them tick. I wanna have a real, actual, genuine relationship. But I don't need to be best friends with the people that report into me, but I want them to respect me. I want to respect them. I want to know who they are. I want to know about their families, what makes them, what they're interested in, what they're not interested in. And by having that foundational understanding, I can craft, you know, specific language and other things that I think is going to get the absolute best out of them.
It definitely makes sense. Yeah, I have a similar approach. Talk to us, Kevin, about I was kind of joking about it in the beginning of the podcast, right? About growth, that position where 5 to 10 years ago, it was like, what is this? Now it kind of encompasses a variety of different things and it's so valuable and so important to an organization. Where do you see that even evolving more in the next 5 to 10 years, that role?
Yeah, no, that is the $1 million question, right? I think there's so many things that are going to impact the advertising, marketing, design business moving forward, obviously with AI and so many other things that are now becoming more and more prevalent from a tools perspective. And so how is that going to impact what I'm doing? Well, I think one, more than anything else, that human to human connection is still going to be the most important thing. Right? You have to figure out a way to show that on the other end of that phone, on the other end of that email, there's a true living, breathing human being, right? So there's that part of it. Then on top of it, I think that there's going to be a more of an evolution because, you know, I think certain companies in like the agency model of the past where you'd have one AOR that does everything, that doesn't seem to be as prevalent as it once was, right? That's starting to fall by the wayside. You usually have like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different agencies helping you with so many different things because of the nature of the market now, right? There's just so many channels, so many avenues, so many ways to reach people. You know, you could focus all your energy on just designing websites or applications or creating brand campaigns, you know, or even CRM campaigns, right? Like that, there are agencies that are just dedicated to those types of things. But I think the more that you can find ways to establish a relationship and avoid some of the RFP process, because it's just so labor intensive for everybody involved, right? The client has to put it together. They're, you know, coordinating across a number of people internally. Then the agency's coordinating for all of this work that may or may not turn into a tangible long-term or even short-term relationship. And so how do you find ways around that and just establish that relationship one-to-one to avoid some of that, to save time? Because that's the other thing too. Like I was at a conference not too long ago, like the Retail Innovation Conference in Chicago. And I saw the VP of marketing for Liquid Death speak. And I thought he was really fascinating because he talked about how they'll have an idea on Wednesday. They'll shoot it on a Friday. They'll edit it on a Sunday and it'll be out in the marketplace on Monday, right? Like that's who you're competing against now from a retail perspective, right? And they're doing all that internally, you know? And so that speed to market, again, it's kind of like stealing from, you know, Talladega Nights, but if you're not first, you're last, you know? And that holds true, especially in marketing, especially with product advertising, all of those types of things. You really want to be first to market, if possible. That's not always the case, right? Like there's outliers and things like Hydrox was the first to market before Oreo. And I don't know anybody that's like, give me some Hydrox.
Yeah.
Not to knock Hydrox.
Yeah.
But again, like that's there are exceptions to every rule. But again, I think you have to find ways to be very quick to market. You have to move with alacrity. And I think that's what you're going to see a lot more of. So if we can position ourselves as an organization that can provide that kind of speed to market, then I think that's going to be the evolution of a lot of the people in my role if they're going to continue to be successful.
You know, it kind of echoes. We had a guest on in the past, the CMO of Mint Mobile. And one of their advantages, we asked them and they said, it's what you said about Liquid Death, Kevin, the fact that we can move very quickly and we could idea, concept, shoot, it's out on the market very quickly. So I think, yeah, to your point, out there quickly, but with the right intentions, with the right messaging too, as well. Love it.
Well, what that same gentleman pointed out is with Liquid Death is that he's like, look, we have very specific guardrails in place. We know where we want to go, what we want to do. And, you know, as Seinfeld says, comedy has a binary response, right? You either laugh or you don't, right? It's funny or it's not, you know, right? You do stand-up comedy, right? So you don't get a laugh, you're like, that didn't work.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
If you get the laugh, you're like, that worked. You know, that's how they kind of operate internally. They have these specific guardrails in place of things they don't want to say, don't want to do. But as long as it fits within there and they laugh, get it out to market. You know, they trust themselves, they trust their vision, they trust the things that they think are funny, you know? And so again, like if you can have that kind of mentality internally, then externally, you need to find partners if you're going to work with an outside agency that has that same kind of mentality.
Yeah, no, I love it. It's a lot of people I know record all their sets. And I was like, well, I don't record it because, well, if they don't laugh, then it's not funny. And I just got to go back and do it again. What are you watching the video of that for? Anyway, so yeah, Kevin, talk to us. I want to, before we get into our, you know, kind of personal side of getting to know you on the podcast, you mentioned in the beginning of the response there about AI and perhaps some trends, but what are some trends that you're seeing in the industry now in the next couple of years to pay attention to?
That's good. I mean, there's so many trends, right? I mean, AI is the big buzzword. I do feel like it's a little overblown. You know, I don't want to say that AI is in its infancy, but I think compared to what it's going to become, it feels like it is, right? For me, I feel like AI in terms of the way that most people interface with it now on Copilot and everything else is search on steroids, right? It's just consolidating now rather than providing you a bunch of links and you having to do the research yourself. It's like, here's all that kind of information consolidated down and which I think is very, very helpful, but we're not close to the machines becoming, you know, our machine overlords just yet, right? So I think that's a good thing. But I also think it's an imperative that we all learn how to leverage and utilize these tools right now to make sure we can continue to be successful moving forward and understand, because if we're not, somebody else is, you know? So, but outside of that, like other trends that I'm seeing in the industry, I mean, you know, I've always been a big fan of storytelling and brand storytelling and those types of advertisements. And I think they are very effective if they're done correctly. You know, I've seen agencies that have been successful at that more recently, like around, I can't think of any specific examples right now, but there's just been a bunch that are focused in on those kind of brand narratives. And again, if it's true to the brand and true to who they are, and you have the opportunity and the ability to spend so you get in front of people, that's good. I mean, obviously, influencer marketing is everywhere now. I think there are some things coming out, like highlighting the fact that maybe it isn't as impactful or as effective as people think it is. But at the same time, my three kids, ages 7 to 12, just watch, you know, YouTube shorts on a constant basis, 95% of which are some other kid trying to sell them something. And then they want to go buy it. So it's really effective in that regard. I think that's the trendiest thing for young people right now. That's where they're getting all their information. When I watch regular TV, my kids are more interested in the commercials that are happening than what's happening between them.
Yeah. You know, and like you said, the storytelling aspect, I can give an example there. I was at a automotive marketing conference here in Manhattan. And now I live in Manhattan, so I don't own a car. So I didn't kind of know what's out there. There was a brand, Subaru, I'll say it, and Subaru was really telling the story about, you know, the relationship with dogs and animals. And I guess a lot of their owners are dog owners, and their show, I've never owned a dog. I never had it, but it showed like this. I was almost crying at this conference, Kevin. I'm like, why am I crying? It's like 11:13 AM. I don't even own a dog or a car. And it's, again, the storytelling of like how that dog was little. I'm like, this is crazy. So you're right. It's like companies like that using storytelling for those reasons. And it's, I think storytelling and the emotions, I think people buy emotionally, right? Especially on the business to consumer side, right? It's kind of, what's your emotional attachment to a soft drink or an automobile, right?
Well, one of the anecdotes that I've been sharing for many, many years, and I kind of already highlighted Hydrox and Oreos, but I remember being a teenager and I was watching I think a rerun of Seinfeld or something with my mom. And to give everybody some context, I was a teenager in the 90s. There's this great commercial that Oreos did at the time where a dad and a daughter, and they're sitting at a counter together. And the daughter breaks her Oreo cookie in half and starts dunking it in the milk. And then the dad turns to the daughter and says, "I remember when I used to have to do that for you," like meaning break the cookie in half because she wasn't strong enough because she's a little girl. And then so the daughter hands her an Oreo cookie and he does it. And that's the whole commercial, right? And I remember looking at my mom and she's tears streaming down her face. And I was just like, you know, I was a jerky teenager, like all teenagers, like, "Why are you crying at a commercial? That's so dumb, you know, like, why would you do that?" You know? And she's like, "You'll see." Now, first of all, fast forward to today, as a 44-year-old father of three, I cry all the time at everything. So comeuppance is a true thing, you know? But then the next day, what do we have in our house? The largest box of Oreos, right? Like that commercial really resonated, and it's about the story that you tell. And again, at the end of the day, human beings are completely driven by emotion, right? Like everything that we do, I saw this recently at a conference I was at, where they talked about everything we buy is in some way a cultural act because it represents who we are, right? We want those things that are outward facing to reflect us. The clothes that we wear, the cars that we drive, all of those things are reflection of our own personalities. And so again, if you can create a narrative that actually has some sort of real emotional resonance with your core customer, price point goes out the window, right? And again, Hydrox was the first sandwich cookie to market. They're still a lower price point, but Oreo is eating their lunch, you know, like, quite literally, you know. So again, it's about figuring out and crafting those narratives that really work. And also to your example too, I mean, I worked on a campaign a few years back for a dog food brand. And all we did, there was this great, like, you know, kind of iconic TV ad campaign that had worked really well. And then we threw it online on social and it went over like a lead balloon. Like it didn't do anything. Like nobody was clicking on it. Nobody was commenting on it. All they did was add an overlay saying, "How did your dog get its name?" We had 10,000 comments in the first day, you know, because people love talking about their dogs. They love sharing stories about how their dogs got their names. So you have to have those insights, but you also have to make ensure you're crafting narratives for the specific medium that you're on, right? So if you're on social, they want to engage. They want to have a back and forth. They want to have a dialogue. Obviously, if you're creating a narrative for, you know, TV and that kind of stuff, it's a little bit different. You have to tell a clear and cohesive story and hopefully they pay attention to it, but that's different. So again, like those things really, really matter. The medium matters, the messaging matters, but more than anything else, the story matters.
Yeah, no, I could not agree more. And you and I were a lot of similarities, you and I. I'm, you know, I was a teenager in the 90s. We're, you know, the theater background. I'll be 46 in a month. And I cry all the time now since I had kids. I'm like, this is ridiculous. About commercials, I never even spoke when this little girl could hear her mom for the first time. I don't know this little girl or her mom. I'm like, I'm losing it. And I'm not afraid to admit it, marketing stir audience. You know, that's being, you know, owning it. So real men cry. We do. Why not? And so, Kevin, let's get back to our LinkedIn question that we ask every one of our guests, and some of the most unique answers ever. You know, your title, right? You, a big company title, you probably get a lot of people who solicit you and say, "Hey, you know, Kevin, so what's a message that resonates with you? And what's one that you just pet peeve, you hate on LinkedIn and you kind of practice yourself that you don't, you know, your methodology?"
I think we've all seen those memes of like when you accept a LinkedIn invite and immediately somebody's like, "Can I tell you about?" And you're like, "Oh, give me a couple of days, you know, like to settle in. And now that we've linked in together." But look, I get it. It's a hustle out there. My job is very similar, right? I have to reach out to people from, like, you know, it's a cold outreach a lot of the times. People don't know me. But what's effective with me, I think, is honestly just honesty. You know, like sometimes I like a good hook every once in a while. If somebody's got a funny subject line or something that might, you know, make my eyebrows raise a little bit, and I'll say, "Okay, well, what's this about?" But oftentimes too, it's just about the right time. Honestly, like if you are right in the market for a new specific SaaS tool or something else, and somebody happens to hit you up at that perfect moment, which I know is like, I'm telling the audience out there to thread a needle, but that's usually how it works, right? And any opportunity that I get, I leverage LinkedIn as a, you know, I do outreach on LinkedIn through, you know, Sales Navigator and other stuff. But for the most part, I try to garner people's actual email addresses and find ways to reach out to them like that, because people are just so over inundated on LinkedIn now, right? I know it happens to me. You get lost in this sea of so much communication that you're not sure what's worth responding to or what isn't. And so it's tough. I mean, I think it's like, usually if I'm going to respond, if it's something that I, you know, like a vendor reaching out to me that I potentially could work with, it usually just has to be something I absolutely need and they just happen to hit me at the right time. Otherwise, it's hard because I'm in a position where I'm actively trying to go out and find new clients, you know? So that's really not my remit, right? When people reach out to me, I usually try to hand them off. But again, being in a kind of like a sales-oriented position, I try to be as helpful as possible. Like I always hand people off or provide introductions or do those types of things if I think there's some value there.
Yeah, same for me. You know, recently we had a guest on and they described it. I've never heard this term before. It's like you connect with someone and immediately they called it a pitch slap. Yeah, I was like laughing. I was like, I've never heard that. It's so funny. It's right. And it just happened recently to me where this person was saying, you know, it was like maybe 12, 14 people in common. And, you know, you were helping enterprise clients, me and this and that. And I said, okay, you know, just maybe we'll collaborate and talk. And then it was boop, 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 every few days. And I'm like, whoa, all right, man, this is not what you had in mind, but it's crazy.
Well, when people write tiny novellas too, like you're like, I don't have, like, make it five sentences. Like I do feel like that's a solid rule of thumb, right? If you're reaching out to people for the very first time, keep it concise. Keep it clear, keep it succinct, make sure you're getting to the main points as quick as possible so somebody can quickly scan, see what you do and decide if it's worth following up. And if you're like this long diatribe about, hey, we went to the same university and blah, and you're like, oh, yeah, it's cool and all. And I'm for that too. Like those things are kind of helpful. Like when you can have some sort of like one-to-one connection, like saying, oh, we went to the same alma mater or whatever. But at the same time, you still got to keep it succinct.
Yeah, no, I agree. Last question. Talk to us about you're out in Arizona, you and the fam. What do you like to do? What's your weekends look like? What are you doing for fun, Kevin?
Yes. Well, when I'm not working, I am essentially a glorified Uber driver for my children. I think I have a 1-star rating from them right now. But they, my oldest is a ballerina. So she is in dance like 10 hours a week. So lots of back and forth from my home to Ballet, Arizona. My son and I do boxing every Friday. My middle daughter, Quinny, is in 2 different dance studios. She's about to switch over to Ballet, Arizona. Baseball, all the things, you know, all the things that you do when you have kids, like 3 kids aged 7 to 12, like they're mixed, but I love it. It's so fun. But that is a lot of my time. But then outside of that, like, you know, I'm a film file. I love, you know, TV and film and those types of things and watching all those things when I have a little extra time, or reading, you know, and hanging out with my wife. You know, we've been together about 20 years. So, and she still likes me, surprisingly. So
I believe it. Yeah. No, sounds like my life with 2 kids, but no car, but just kind of walking them around New York City, karate class, baseball, and soccer, all this stuff. But I love it. I live for it. It's awesome. But that is amazing. Thank you so much, Kevin, for sharing your time and your story with us. Ladies and gentlemen, check out Design It. That's Kevin O'Connor from Design It. He's the Director of Growth. I'm Vincent Petrofessa. I'll give AJ a big hug when I see him and he wishes he could have been here, but this has been another episode of The Marketing Stir. Thank you so much for listening and we'll talk soon.
Thanks for listening to The Marketing Stir podcast by Stirista. Please like and subscribe. If you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please email us at themarketingstir@stirista.com.